We are just a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. As we do each and every Wednesday, we get the skinny, the lowdown, all the info about the economy. Laureen Gilbert, award-winning president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial, with us this morning. Good morning, Laureen. How are you?
Good morning, Ed. Great to be here.
It's so great to have you this morning. Delighted. And thank you again for taking the time to be with us this morning. I want to remind everybody that your family love letter seminar takes place tomorrow at 5 p.m. Tell us a little bit about that.
It does, Ed. And this is the family love letter is a way to make sure that your wishes are carried out, not in the same way that your estate plan does, which is a legal document, but in a way that makes sure that your loved ones know where things are, where important documents like your passwords are, and make sure they have a list of everything that you own. I just heard, Ed, a story this last week about somebody who had passed away, and they are still searching for the items that they don't even know what accounts exist. So it's a place to document everything, as well as write your family a letter to specific loved ones, kind of giving them more insight to your heart, your desires, your mission statement, your personal, the personal words you'd want to tell your family if you were no longer here.
Okay. And do you sit with the clients and help craft that letter, or do you send them off to a room by themselves and here you go work? How does that work?
Thank you for asking. The workshop that we have going on is to explain the process. And we have the brochure that we will then, after the webinar, we'll be giving that brochure to individuals. And depending on what the individual wants, we work with clients one-on-one. On what we like to do is work with them one-on-one on parts of it and then send them back to do other parts of it on their own.
Okay. All right. And how can we tap into this tomorrow at 5 o'clock?
Just email us at info@wealthwisefinancial.com and we'll send you the link.
All right. Well, thank
the
you.
Zoom link.
Thank you for doing that, first of all. I think that's magnificent. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely.
The timing of last week's conversation, just, you know, we're just about an hour short. We should be on an hour later, I think, because last week, Fed Chair Jerome Powell, apparently his words helped grow the week's equity market returns. Tell us about that.
So, yes, the markets breathed a sigh of relief after Powell discussed where the Fed thinks we are. And it was the most positive tone that he's had since the pandemic. And that is, he was offering assurance as far as, you know, how the economy was going and that the economy was making progress towards maximum employment and price stability. And so what that also means is that the Fed is now likely to start tapering or slowing down the purchases, the bond purchases that they've been making every month. He also said that they're going to continue to allow kind of, you know, the inflation number to go above 2% for some time until they know that the economy is truly solid. And investors were happy with what the Fed said. And so, you know, equity markets continued to soar higher.
Okay. Is this essentially what we're looking at? Is a Teflon market? Is his tapering just about appeasing the market?
Well, tapering could cause what we call a taper tantrum. And, you know, in 2013, that's what happened. A taper tantrum happened when there was an announcement that they were going to stop, you know, some of the QE, right, quantitative easing. And so there's been this big debate, will we have another taper tantrum? So far, you know, what this last week showed is that, you know, the market didn't react negatively to the idea of tapering. But, you know, that doesn't mean that the market won't react when it actually happens. So,
all right,
we'll see.
Okay. August was a great month for stocks. The Dow was up more than 1%, while NASDAQ surged about 4%. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ both hit all-time highs on Monday. They pulled back a little bit yesterday. And right now, the Dow isn't far from hitting its next record at 36,000. However, is there a correction coming? Is there a correction in the future? Is that likely?
Yeah, so you made some good points about the market so far, and August was another great month, and the S&P actually went up 2.9% in the month of August. And it was the seventh consecutive higher month, the longest streak since 10 in a row that happened in 2018. So the market numbers just, the market continued to grind up in the month of August, which has been fantastic because we're looking at an S&P 500 that's up over 20% year to date, which is also the best beginning year since August of 1997, right, up to this point of the year. So now, bye-bye August, hello September. September tends to be one of the toughest months of the market, and we know October is also a tough month for the market. So we're heading into the season, Ed, when many times the markets get bumpy and rough. And let me remind listeners that in a normal year, you have three times in the year when we have a negative 5%. And that's what we call an intra-year decline of 5%. We've had zero. Okay? So for all of the above-listed reasons, I'm saying investors need to be prepared for a correction. What's a correction? A correction is a 10% decline from the high down.
Okay.
And that is very normal. So if we look at last year, the S&P 500 had a 9.6% pullback from September 2nd to September 23rd. Okay?
Wow.
Once again, okay. Normal. That didn't even quite hit true correction territory, but basically a correction. So what do you do? What we're doing is we are rebalancing our portfolios, given that we've had such a run-up in the markets, back to people's target allocation. So if somebody is a 60-40 investor, 60% stock, 40% fixed income, but because the markets have gone up so much, they have more equity exposure, get back to your target right now. So that when a correction hits, which is normal, then you can increase back to target.
Okay, which is what you're probably going to be doing around November and December, right? Because this is just a September and October thing we're looking at?
Well, you know, you never know. I mean, you can't predict the markets exactly. We can just say, you know, it tends to be, you know, it's happened in the past.
Right.
No prediction of the future. We don't know. But we do think, let me just put this in here, and that is we are in a bull market run. In a bull market run, we are in a long-term trend up. So even with a 5 or 10% decline, we see that as a buying opportunity to put more money to work in equity.
Okay. A term that I'm going to ask you what it means, first of all, and why I would be concerned. What's a reverse repo market, and why should I be concerned that it's topped $1 trillion?
Right. So, you know, what's hit the news quite a bit lately are we in, you know, should we be concerned? Is this a flashing warning sign with our short-term reverse, you know, it's the Fed's reverse repo program that's topped $1 trillion consistently. That program was created in 2013, and it's been a good system to have for short-term lending, but expanding that too heavily can cause financial stress in the market. Now, we think that this has happened because of excess cash looking to add some kind of incremental return because there's not much yield out there.
Right.
And we have a lot of liquidity in the market. So we think it's more a factor of liquidity, not so much financial instability. We don't think the warning is that there's structural financial instability. So that would be my comment.
Just a matter of liquidity.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct.
Beautifully explained. Thank you. It's something that you and I have been speaking about for a few weeks, actually, and we have listeners that are interested in this. The concept of FIRE is based on the notion that retirement is determined by a financial number and not by a person's age, of course, and it focuses on keeping expenses as low and savings really super high. And that means usually savings anywhere between 50 to 75% of someone's annual income well before the age of 65. I couldn't live off of just saving 75%. Can you explain FIRE, and specifically, what is the 4% rule?
Sure. So FIRE stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And it is the concept that you live frugally, very, very frugally, not spending your money so that you can, in effect, retire earlier than the typical, you know, we've in Americans' minds, we have this idea of somewhere between 65 and 67, and that's because it coincided with Social Security. That's really how we got there. Has nothing to do with anything else but Social Security and Medicare, which, by the way, if they, you know, they've been increasing, you know, Social Security to your normal retirement age has been increasing.
I think we could throw life expectancy in there too, and that it's only 72, 73 or something like that. So,
well, when Social Security started, you were expected to live 1 to 2 years after you started receiving Social Security. Right. So now we've got 25 and 30 year time horizons. So, you know, everything has changed. But anyway, the concept is so that you can retire much earlier than, and people go to extreme lengths for that. Now, when you talk about the 4% rule, people need to be very careful. The 4% rule is not just a FIRE rule, financial independence, retire early. The 4% rule has been a standard rule that was developed by William Bengen back in 1994 that basically said that if you had a 30-year time horizon, you could spend 4% of your portfolio in the first year, followed by an inflation COLA attached to that every year afterwards. However, there's a lot of assumptions there, including that you have market returns, right? And so people need to be careful because in a low interest rate environment, a lot of people have said we need to scrap the 4% rule and move it to a 3% rule. And ultimately, Ed, you can't just use a number like that. You need to do Monte Carlo simulation. Monte Carlo simulation uses 1,000 iterations of market returns to determine probability of success. So, you know, you can simplify it by saying, okay, yes, you can use 3 or 4%, but there's a lot of assumptions that go into that. So it's not a full financial plan to say that. But what the FIRE people are aiming for is the number that they need to save so that they know that first year they can live on that 4%.
Right.
So for instance, $1 million. If you have $1 million, 4% of that is $40,000. And so you know, and this is a way for anybody to think about just a baseline of what you might need for retirement. And like I said, you need more extensive financial planning that uses Monte Carlo. But if you're just trying to think in your head before you do planning, if you live on $80,000 a year, then $2 million, 4% of $2 million, is $80,000. So it's a good way to get a rough figure of what you might have and what you might need. Try to use 3 versus 4 just to be safer.
Okay. I thank you very much for that clarity. I knew we would get clarity from you. And I don't think I could live that frugally. I'd want to, but I just don't think I'm a spender.
Well, it does depend on how much you make, right? Because
right.
The more that you make, the easier it is to live on 50% of your income.
Right.
You know, if you make $1 million a year, oh yeah, I can live on 500,000 versus $1 million.
Right.
But for most people, you know, that living on half your income
is a tough
would
call.
Be tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Google, once again, has postponed a full return to the office, announcing that its employees can now continue to work remotely until well into next year. And of course, decisions like that have already been made by Amazon and Facebook. Since we know that the unvaccinated are driving this latest COVID outbreak, are you going to see more companies with mandatory vaccinations?
Well, let's not forget that not only the unvaccinated, but growing numbers of breakthrough cases, Ed, I keep hearing of breakthrough cases of people who are completely and fully vaccinated.
Right.
So, you know, this is a virus. It is, you know, let's not forget we've gone from 2 weeks to, you know, 2 years. So, you know, people need to know that this virus is here. It's here to stay. We're going to have to adjust our lives accordingly. And, you know, here soon people will be receiving boosters. I know, you know, my father who had a heart transplant, he's already received his booster shot. So people like that. So you're going to start seeing that as we get into the fall. And that will help us continue to reopen. I think that, you know, but what we're hearing is gatherings, you know, indoor gatherings again, a lot of caution and precautions around that. Workplaces, keeping people, you know, more remote for longer. And look, what companies learned, and we've talked about this, Ed, was that they were amazed at how productive people were working remotely. So I think, you know, we've got a long-term trend of people being able to work remotely, and it is helping families move wherever they want to that might be more affordable. One of my clients just went to her boss to ask her, you know, and of course this was with my encouragement, to ask if she could move to Austin because she can afford a home in Austin, and home affordability here is now unattainable for many. And her boss said yes. So, you know, more and more people are asking their bosses, can I move? And most of the time the answer is yes. So I think, you know, we're going to continue to see a lot of remote working.
Okay. And just two things I want to cover there, that when you mentioned the breakthrough infections, yes, there are a lot of breakthrough infections, but we're finding that 99% of the people that are hospitalized and dying are unvaccinated. Breakthrough infections, yes, you get sick, you carry the virus, you may spread it even, but the chances of hospitalizations and deaths and clogging up hospitals and the cost behind all of that, that's really with the unvaccinated. And secondly, I want to kind of put our finger on the fact of, is there a point in time where if this continues like this, that we're sluggish about it, sluggish about recovering from COVID, that we'll see companies mandating vaccinations for their employees? Would you ever consider that for your company?
Never consider it for my company. Absolutely never, because I don't believe in mandates like that. I think people need to take personal responsibility on what they want to do. It's not my job to police them. So I'm opposed to that personally, but you know, certainly we've heard of those kinds of measures with governmental jobs. And the question is, does that transfer over to the private sector? And then is it challenged and goes through the court system as people might resist it? So, you know, ultimately, unfortunately, you know, people do need to make their own decisions on what they're going to do with it. I am vaccinated and I'm happy that I got my vaccine for all the reasons that you mentioned, Ed. But, you know, people do have the freedom to decide what they want to do.
Okay. And when we first came down with COVID, let's say, back in March or February of last year, and you went to remote work, were you scared at first that you wouldn't be as productive, that your employees wouldn't be as productive working from home? And how pleasantly surprised were you after that?
I know my employees and they're fantastic. And so I really had no doubt about productivity. I had greater concern about, would we be effective and productive in continuing to meet with our clients? That's where my surprise was. So the quick adoption of moving to a webinar platform like Zoom helped us and people across the nation to be incredibly productive with each other. It's not the same as meeting people in person. We know that. But that surprised me. And that's what's carrying on is people's, I think more and more, even with our meetings, people don't want to come into the office. I think they like sitting in their offices or their homes and just talking to me over a Zoom meeting. So I think it offers us, it's definitely offered us the ability to service our clients, and we have clients in 26 states. So where we used to do those phone calls with people in different states and just a phone call, now we see those people on a Zoom call in those 26 states. So that's lovely.
Excellent. I want to remind our audience that the Family Love Letter Seminar is tomorrow at 5 p.m. Tell us again how to tune in.
Yeah, so September 2nd at 5 p.m., and if you'll email us at info@wealthwisefinancial.com, we'll send you a link. And Ed, I don't know if you saw that I received an award, another award.
Tell us, please.
The Think Advisor Luminary Award, Class of 2021. It's a national publication, industry-specific, and I was named one of their Think Advisors, which has to do with educating the public.
Very, very
just like
nice.
We're doing here.
So your mantle is now just packed with awards. I'm not kidding. You've gotten just about everything I could possibly think of. That's fantastic. And you still, by the way, need to pick up your Silver Tongue Award that you won last year here during Takeover.
Yeah,
it sits right here in the office. We all look at it every day.
Yes.
And go, "Oh, she's coming to get this thing."
Well,
congratulations, first of all, on the latest award, and we're proud to have you here on the show, and I'm proud to know you personally. Laureen Gilbert, how do we get in touch with you otherwise?
949-748-1177.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this morning, Laureen.
Thank you, Ed.
All right, 8:24 the time. It's the morning's personal stash coming up at 9. That was Laureen Gilbert, Wealthwise Financial Services. Mornings with Ed.
Money, 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 money. Yeah.